This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Littering. If you're out there on Twitter, you can give John a follow at JonLitterine. You can follow me at JakeSki52. Today, John and I will be making our fantasy picks for the biggest fights of UFC 209, where the interim title trend continues, and we have two title fights on the line. Before we get started, though, John, we finally got confirmation this week that George St. Pierre will take on middleweight champion Michael Bisping in his return to the octagon sometime in the back half of 2017. What are your initial thoughts on this fight?
Well, the first thing that I thought of when I heard it is that, and it was essentially confirmed by Michael Bisping, is that this is kind of a money grab is not the best word, but this is a fight that is designed to draw ratings as opposed to give the guy who is most deserving of a title shot the next opportunity. The UFC does this a lot. It's a business first and foremost before anything else, so we shouldn't really be surprised, but there are plenty of guys in that division who deserve a title shot before George St. Pierre, who's been away. And Michael Bisping essentially said in an interview the last couple of days, I've been in the company a long time and I deserve a chance to make big money in a fight, and he's going to, but that doesn't necessarily mean the guy he's fighting is the most deserving of the title shot.
Exactly. We almost saw this in his last one when he fought Dan Henderson, kind of giving Dan Henderson one last chance to go out on top and what turned out to be a pretty good fight. So he's going for the money fights. You know, a lot of people are going to criticize him for, you know, not wanting to take on Yoel Romero or not wanting to take on Jacare Souza, but he's very much right in this. And the impressive thing to me is, if he can beat GSP somehow, and it looks like GSP is the early favorite at about minus 140 when it very much opened, if he can somehow beat GSP, that means that Michael Bisping will have beaten Dan Henderson, Anderson Silva, and GSP, which is quite the resume for anyone's career.
It definitely is, and Bisping's right in the sense that he's been with the company for so long, and he's done so much for the company that he does deserve a chance. He's older. He doesn't have all that much time left either, so he does deserve this opportunity, but the UFC makes so many fights these days, elite title fights, where you look at and go, that person doesn't deserve a title shot, that it's hard to take some of them seriously. But like I said before, this whole thing is a business. It always has been. It always will be. Their goal is to make money and to sell tickets and to drive ratings, and that's not going to change.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that GSP, just the name recognition alone, gets him there. Just for some perspective, since GSP walked away in 2013, Michael Bisping has fought 8 different times. So there's the ring rust factor. There's, you know, Bisping coming off of knee surgery factor. There's a whole lot of factors that come into play here, but we will discuss that when the time comes. Again, GSP looking like the early betting favorite at minus 140 to minus 145, depending on where you look here. But John, let's get into the main event here of UFC 209, set to take place Saturday night in Las Vegas. We have got the welterweight championship, and it is a rematch, and it is a heck of a rematch between Tyrone Woodley and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. On DraftKings, looks like Thompson's getting the edge, $8,400 salary as opposed to Woodley's $7,800. Once again, Stephen Thompson is the favorite, the betting favorite, at minus 160. Vegas has Woodley at about plus 140. The odds to finish here are actually minus 135, which was a little bit surprising considering how much punishment each were able to take and survive in that first fight. But, John, first, who do you got in this one? And second, how do you see this playing out? Is this something that you might go after on DraftKings?
Well, this... I'll start out by saying I'm a little surprised that Stephen Thompson is such a big favorite. $600 as far difference as far as DraftKings salary certainly isn't much, but I'm a little surprised that Thompson is such a big favorite in the Vegas odds. Mm-hmm. This to me is pretty much about as close to a pick 'em fight as you'll find. Not a surprise given the first time they fought to a draw. But again, this, and we say this a lot when we break down fights, this is one of those fights that the flow of the fight and how the fight progresses is going to determine the winner. Tyron Woodley in the first fight wrestled in the first round, did a really good job. He kept Thompson on his back for the vast majority of the round. And then after that first round was over, mysteriously, he stopped wrestling. So if you told me he was going to wrestle for five rounds, I would think he would win. But... we say all the time, guys, for some odd reason, whether it's, you know, a macho thing and they just feel like they have to try and knock the other person out, they get away from what is their strength. Now, Stephen Thompson did a better job over the course of the first fight in the striking exchanges between the two guys. I would say he won more of the exchanges, which is no surprise.
I think that's partially why he's the higher DraftKings salary, just because of the volume striking that he brings to the table. He's going to score points, so win or lose, he'll get you DraftKings points.
Oh, yeah, he definitely will. And there's no, you know, you're not going to beat Stephen Thompson in an extended kickboxing match. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, four significant strikes landed per minute in his career for Thompson, as opposed to just a little over 2.5 for Woodley. So I think that explains the salary discrepancy.
It is, and the other thing that happened in the first fight was Woodley hammered Thompson in round four so badly, to the point where it was honestly quite shocking that Wonderboy was able to survive.
Yeah, I thought it was going to get stopped at first.
It sure looked like it. And not only did it not get stopped, but after Thompson survived the round and went into round five, he somehow was fighting in round five looking like the fresher fighter. Mm-hmm. Which to me, considering the beating that he took just a round earlier, was mind-boggling.
Yeah.
So Woodley, you know, there's no doubt Woodley has more one-punch knockout power. You know, if he connects, he has a far better chance of finishing you with one shot than Thompson does. And, you know, I like I've said before, I have been on Thompson and, you know, been a fan before he started making this run to where he is now. So I'm sticking with them now, but again, a fight that's not, doesn't appear at least, and we already saw a full 25-minute fight between the two men, a fight where there doesn't appear to be a whole lot separating the two guys. Mm-hmm. But I think I would, it may not be, you know, pleasing to watch, but if I were Tyron Woodley's coach and I was Tyron Woodley's camp, I would tell him to try and keep Stephen Thompson pinned to the mat for as much of this fight as he can, because he can't beat you with mm-hmm. his kickboxing skills if he's on his back.
Yeah, if it comes down to ground strikes, then Woodley might be able to, you know, get enough points to win out a decision here. But one thing I found was interesting is back at UFC 205 when these guys first fought, all four of us on the RotoWire MMA staff, you and I, Evan and Richard, we all picked Thompson across the board. This time around, I posted our staff picks article earlier this afternoon, and We're split 2-2. And I switched over for one of those reasons, because I saw the champion last against Thompson well enough and even put Thompson on the ropes well enough. And I agree with you, John, that if he comes in with the right strategy and can wrestle, I do have a lot of confidence in Woodley to grind out a decision. But he does have that one punch knockout power. So I think there are a couple ways that Woodley can win. And, you know, you got to pick upsets here and there. And I think that's one of the ones I'm picking for this card. Like if I was going to Vegas and betting on the fight, I would take the dog DraftKings, I guess this is kind of a cop-out, but DraftKings I'd lean more towards using Thompson just because of the disparity in strikes landed per minute. So DraftKings, it gets a lot closer for me. But if I'm just looking at the odds straight up and I'm betting, I would take Woodley in this fight. Although I 100% agree with you, John, this is as close to a pick 'em as it can get. And I can very much see why our staff is split 2-2 on this one.
And the other thing that we have to say here, and it doesn't get mentioned enough, is because we don't see it a lot, is Stephen Thompson's wrestling is underrated. You know, no one ever talks about it because of how good of a kickboxer he is, but he's a good wrestler and he's getting better. He just doesn't have the experience in that area that he does in the striking area. Yeah. You know, his takedown defense over his UFC career is just under 80%. It's darn good.
Yeah, 78%. I got their fight metric up right now, and
him going for a lot of takedowns.
Yep.
But he doesn't have to. If he can just defend them, his striking alone will win him fights. So I am a little surprised in both the odds and the salaries that this isn't closer. But I would agree with you. If you said, all right, here's free money, who are you going to bet on? I would bet on Woodley because I think he's a better value given the odds, because I don't think he's really a plus 140. I think this should just about be even. But if you just, again, and this is going to depend on the flow of the fight and who is able to implement what they do best. If this turns into a grappling match, Woodley's going to win. If this turns into an extended kickboxing match again, you certainly have to favor Thompson.
Either way, it's going to be an excellent fight. It won Fight of the Night honors back at UFC 205, and I think fans are hoping that it's getting its main event spot, and we'll see an equally exciting brawl here. But let's move on to the co-main event. We've got another belt on the line. This time it is the interim lightweight championship. Of course, Conor McGregor is the belt holder in this weight class, taking a little bit of time off here, and in the meantime we're going to do an interim one. And a man like two men, Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson, both deserving of a chance at this title given what they've done to date. But it's quite surprising to see the large disparity. Well, maybe not surprising depending on who you talk to, because DraftKings salaries, Nurmagomedov 8,900, Ferguson 7,300. Khabib is a minus 175 betting favorite here, as Ferguson's a plus 155 dog here. And that's roughly stayed the same. I think maybe a little more money moving towards Khabib, but not a lot. I've seen him as high as minus 200 in places, as low as about minus 167 in some places. So that's, and then the odds to finish here, pretty much a wash. It's minus 115, so they're thinking it'll finish, but not necessarily an overwhelming favorite to finish here. The staff is pretty much, we sweep this one here, John, in agreement, but can you tell me what it is about Khabib Nurmagomedov that makes him such a favorite, and why we all like him?
Well, the fact that Khabib is such a favorite is in reference to how good he is and not how poor Tony Ferguson is. Mm-hmm. Tony Ferguson is an excellent fighter. Mm-hmm. But
there are a few lightweights that I would pick over Tony Ferguson. It's just that Khabib is one of them.
You can count on one hand the amount of fighters, at least I would pick at lightweight over Tony Ferguson. But I know I've said on here before, and I'm sticking with it now, until someone beats him, Khabib's the best lightweight in the world as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. He has this really, really, really unmatched, unique ability that if he gets his hands on you, you go to the ground. It's his takedown accuracy in his UFC career is under 50%, which is mind-boggling because he's averaged more than 6 takedowns a fight. So that should give you an idea of how many attempts he does go after and how often he's able to get inside on guys.
Just ask Michael Johnson about that in his last fight. Johnson, defended a few of them, but he keeps coming at you, and he will get you eventually.
He will. And as far as the striking goes, I think Ferguson, it's close. Ferguson in his fight against Lando Venata not all that long ago took way, way, way too much abuse on the feet to the point where it looked like he might actually get finished, which is crazy.
Scary close to getting finished.
Venata was, for those who don't remember, Venata in that time was a last-minute replacement.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, he comes back after, you know, not his best performance against Venata and rolls through Rafael Dos Anjos. Unanimous decision, but that fight wasn't even close in November. So this is – the fact that Khabib is such a favorite is in reference to how much potential – well, not even potential anymore. You know, it's the present time now. But how much – how good Khabib is. And, you know, the other thing everybody has to keep in mind is Tony Ferguson is an excellent submission wrestler. So if Khabib is able to get Ferguson in the ground – you think Ferguson would have a chance to try and implement some of his submissions. But the other thing is, Khabib's position, not only does he get you to the ground, but his body control and his positioning on the mat are impeccable. Mm-hmm. He gives you no room to do anything. He absolutely smothers you. And as far as the striking goes, Khabib never gets hit on the feet because he's never on the feet. He never puts himself in position to get hit. Because he's busy pushing you up against the fence and dragging you to the mat and controlling you on the ground. So I am as excited, we're only in the first few days of March. But again, I think you will be able to count on one hand the amount of fights the UFC produces this year that are of the quality that this one is.
Yeah, it's a very excellent matchup here. And, you know, just looking at the numbers, you could make a case that Ferguson would have an advantage in the striking department. I mean, a 6-inch reach advantage, over 5 significant strikes landed per minute as opposed to Khabib. But like you said, you talked about Khabib on the ground. His striking accuracy, Khabib, is 50% in his career. But if you take it to the ground, I saw this tweet from the UFC Europe account earlier today. If you take it to the ground, he's landed the largest proportion of significant ground strikes in UFC history. It jumps up 14.3% to 64.3%. He's just so dangerous when he gets you to the ground, and chances are he's going to get you there. I mean, Ferguson could always come out and surprise. He'd be a heck of a DraftKings value if he could. But I'm with you in thinking that Khabib Nurmagomedov is possibly the best lightweight in the world. And I think if I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but if they do make that fight with Khabib against Conor McGregor, Conor's probably going to have a hard time.
He's going to have a hard time because I think Khabib is smart enough to not stand and get in a war with McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk a lot about, you mentioned earlier, it seems every card these days has an interim championship tag on it. This one I'm actually okay with.
Yep.
Because Nurmagomedov and Ferguson both deserve a title shot. And Conor McGregor, and we've mentioned this on here as well, is essentially holding the division hostage. Mm-hmm. He's competing in multiple divisions. There's all this nonsense going on with whatever's going on with Floyd Mayweather and all that stuff. So no one really knows what Conor's doing or when Conor's going to do it, because Conor's pretty much going to do what he always does, which is
whatever he wants.
Exactly. So both of these guys deserve a title shot, and this is one where slapping an interim tag on it isn't going to take anything away from it, because both of these guys deserve it and are both championship caliber fighters.
Yeah, well, exactly. One of the most exciting fights that I'm ready to see. Probably the one that I might be more excited for this one than the main event, just because of the caliber of skill here. But let's go ahead. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I said it quickly. Two great fights.
Fights. Yep.
If you look at, and we spoke of this in the last card, the pay-per-view, the Duranemi home card, and you look at the main event, the co-main event, and you're like, wow, that's really, honestly, not that good. These two are as good as
night and day. Night and day.
Yep.
So here's the one. All right, but let's look at the rest of the pay-per-view card here. We go to a middleweight bout between Rashad Evans and Daniel Kelly. Evans comes in a pretty big favorite here, 9,000 to Kelly's salary of 7,200. Evans a -235 DraftKings favorite, Kelly a +195. The odds to finish on here are +100, actually, which would suggest maybe not on DraftKings, but I don't know. Break this one down for us, John. I admit I don't know a whole lot about Daniel Kelly, but I've been watching Rashad Evans since way back in the day, since those Bones fights and even before then. So what does Rashad Evans bring to the table that's going to make him such a big favorite? Because keep in mind, he had problems with his medicals that kept him out of UFC 205, then kept him out of UFC 206, and finally Vegas cleared him, and he's finally able to fight here.
yeah, he did have the medical problem. And I'm a little, again, I'm a little surprised Rashad Evans is such a big favorite in this fight. He's now 37 years old. He'll be 38 in September. This, you don't, and we know all the injury problems he's had. He had a serious knee injury. And at that age, as we say all the time, he doesn't have the explosive, for a guy whose entire offensive arsenal has virtually always been based upon his athleticism and his ability to threaten for takedowns and land takedowns. If you don't have that burst and you can't at least threaten to get your takedowns from multiple positions, you're going to have a hard time winning fights. Now, Daniel Kelly is quite the story. A guy who started MMA, got into MMA late, 39 years old, a four-time Olympian in judo, which is just – there are not many people in any sport who compete in the Olympics four times in the same sport. But a guy who, again, a little similar to Evans in the sense that not a whole lot of power, relies more on – positioning and takedowns, or limiting takedowns in his case. But I think this is going to really be, and I agree with the fact that this could go the distance, because I don't really see a ton of finishing power from either man, especially now with their respective ages. But I think a lot of this is going to depend on how we've seen Rashad lately, and no surprise, he doesn't look like the Rashad who we saw years ago. 2-4 in his last six fights, coming off a really bad loss against Glover Teixeira a little less than a year ago, knocked out in the first round.
Yep. I mean, it's time for him to drop down to middleweight. We didn't mention that at the beginning, but this fight is at 185, and Evans has fought for the majority of his career at the light heavyweight division here. So dropping down to middleweight could help him gain a little bit in terms of size. So I'm thinking that might help his case a little bit. But also, Daniel Kelly's just it's a manageable opponent for him, as opposed to he was going to fight Tim Kennedy at UFC 205. I would have never picked him against Tim Kennedy, even with the rust for Kennedy. So it's more manageable, and I think a lot of people like the veteran in this one.
Certainly more manageable, and I think this is actually a good fight in the sense that it's pretty good marketing, because certainly Evans is a bigger name than Kelly is. But you're putting Evans in a fight where he has a realistic chance of winning. Mm-hmm. You don't need to, when you have older guys like this, you don't need to put them in fights. Guys like Evans who are marketable names and popular, but certainly aren't the fighter they were, several years ago. So you don't need to put them in fights where they're facing a guy who they clearly can't beat. So this is, I think there's a good chance this fight's going to go the distance. Neither man has much finishing ability at this point, or, really ever. Guys rely on their wrestling and grappling skills, so which in turn would probably make both guys, considering the takedown defense both guys have exhibited, would make both guys poor DraftKings plays. But I think Kelly's at both his salary and his Vegas odds, I think he's a pretty good value. I don't really think Evans, I don't want to say he's done, because the shape the guy keeps himself in, and he's an animal and he's committed to the sport, and so you don't want to say he's done. He's certainly not, he's certainly not, Tim Bosch against Jacare done, I'm not saying that, but he isn't in the same, athletic league and sphere that he was early in his career. And that's, that's due to injury, age, and inactivity. It's not anything Rashad did. I hate to break this story to you. You get older, your athletic ability goes. It's no big secret.
Yeah, so I think we can all agree here. We picked Rashad Evans across the board, but 9,000 is maybe a little tad too much on DraftKings. I think there are better quote unquote chalk plays on DraftKings here, and maybe we'll get to some of those a little bit later on here. But let's move on to a name we've already mentioned in this show. And that is Groovy Lando Vannata, who is taking on David Taymour in a lightweight matchup here on the pay-per-view portion of this card. And we've mentioned Lando Vannata before because he had Tony Ferguson, who's fighting for the interim lightweight title, tonight. He had Tony Ferguson on the ropes in the first round when he entered the UFC as a last-minute replacement, and then he was rightfully given a UFC contract to try to see what he could do against an opponent that's more at his, shall we say, experience level here. So this opponent, though, happens to be the separation, at least the numbers, suggest it's quite a bit. Venata checks in at 9,300. Tamur is just 6,900 on DraftKings. Venata's a minus 250 Vegas favorite, and Tamur is plus 210. The odds to finish on this are minus 140, so the best we've seen so far until this next fight we discuss. But there's such a disparity in the numbers for this fight. John, do you think it's warranted?
Nope. This is my upset. I'm taking Tamur, and the simple reason, the reasoning behind this for me is pretty straightforward. Lando Venata, like you said, came in against Tony Ferguson, like we mentioned, last-minute replacement, nearly knocked Ferguson out. And if Venata has shown anything in his two UFC fights, it's that he's willing to take a bunch to land a punch. He did it against Ferguson. He landed plenty of his own, but he ate a few too. In his second fight against John McDessie in late December, he landed a wheel kick that quickly knocked Medesi out cold before he hit the mat. Mm-hmm. Was on all the finalist list for knockout of the year last year. YouTube it, UFC Fight Pass it. Great finish, as good as you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. But Venata is willing to take a beating in order to land a punch. And if there's anything we've seen from David Tamur in his brief UFC career, it's that he has a lot of power, and he is patient to the point where he will not overextend himself and fire off crazy combinations, but he will wait for you to try and be aggressive and counter that. And Venata, like I mentioned, has been aggressive, and I think Tamur can take advantage of that. I think he has the power to finish Venata. Now, of course, Venata certainly has the power to finish him. So it's one of those fights where a lot of this is risk reward, and you have to pick upsets somewhere. And this is, to me, an awful, awfully low salary for all things considered. Venata, certainly with the quick body work he's had in his career, probably deserves to be a favorite. I don't think he deserves to be a favorite by this much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking maybe along the lines like if a lot of people, when they're betting on fights, they like to don't look at the odds and then they write down what they think the odds should be. And then you go and compare them to the actual odds, and that's how a lot of people like to go and pick which fights they're going to bet on, for example. And if you did that with this one, you would think, oh man, I'd have to go Tamur in this one, because you'd think it would be a lot closer. I would have written down maybe minus 135, yeah, 140 for Venata.
40, somewhere in there, maybe minus 150 in the high end.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the metrics for the first time. I'm picking Venata in this one. I'm going chalk, but you've done a really good job of maybe convincing me to change my mind here. I think I'm going to stick with it. But the thing that I'm circling here, as far as stats goes, is significant strikes absorbed per minute, 8.5 for Lando Venata. So you're right. You're not going to have a super long career or a super prosperous career if you're as willing to take in exchange for giving one as Venata is. So that's risky, but you know what? I do like what Venata's been able to do so far, and I'm going to take the favorite in this one, but I would not use him on DraftKings just because $9,300 price tag. I mean, your average per six fighters on DraftKings is $8,333, so you're going 1,000 up for someone who's not a lock, but and you're hoping for that early knockout, and part of the things that determine DraftKings salaries is fantasy points to date, and the early knockouts have helped him in the past, and I can see that. He's just not someone I'm really going to put too much trust in on DraftKings, but overall, if you're going pick one or the other, I'm going to go Venata, but I 100% understand where you're coming from here, John.
Tamur is a four-time Swedish Muay Thai champion, so lay a beating on you with his hands and his feet.
He'll be able to strike, and he's also got a 2-inch reach advantage, it looks like. So it's a slight advantage, but not to be ignored nonetheless here. Let's round out the pay-per-view card, though, John, with a heavyweight battle. Should be a very exciting fight between Alistair Overeem and Mark Hunt. Both of these guys are rebounding from pretty tough performances. Overeem with a loss in a title fight to Stipe Miocic. Mark Hunt with a loss to a pretty roided up Brock Lesnar, to say the least here. The salaries here, like Overeem a little bit, $8,300 to $7,900 for Hunt. Overeem a minus 145 favorite here. Hunt, a plus 125 underdog. The big thing that stands out here, John, is the odds to finish minus 285. Makes you think that one way or another, you got to get a piece of this in your DraftKings lineup.
You do, but Overeem deserves to be the favorite, if nothing else, based upon the body of work of the men lately. Like you said, Overeem coming off a tough loss to Stipe Miocic. But prior to that, four straight wins, Andrei Arlovski, Junior Dos Santos, Roy Nelson, and Stefan Struve.
And don't forget that Dos Santos is fighting for a title at 211. Yeah.
So Overeem deserved his title shot. Didn't work out, but he certainly wasn't one of those where they had no better option at the time. He deserved this title shot. He didn't win, but he deserved it. But so if you think Overeem's going to win and is the better fighter at this point in their careers, which I do, he also has a 6-inch height advantage, which helps. He has an 8-inch reach advantage, which really helps. If you think Overeem is the better fighter, so then you look at the other side to Mark Hunt, and I know you agree because we've talked about this many times. There literally may not be a tougher human being walking the planet Earth than Mark Hunt.
Yeah, you used granite chin in your preview, and I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I will never, until the day I die, expect Mark Hunt to get finished in any fight that he's ever in. Mm-hmm. So if you think Overeem's going to win, which I do, and I think you do too, do you really think he's going to be able to stop Hunt early? I don't.
Yeah.
Which means, by definition, both men are probably poor DraftKings plays. Hunt, because you don't think he's going to win. And Overeem, because finishing Hunt early is pretty much impossible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just want to say, if you disagree with us and think that Hunt's going to come out and get the finish here, if you think Overeem's washed up or his chin, there's question marks, then by all means, Hunt becomes an excellent value play at 7,900. I would almost make multiple lineups, put one with Overeem and one with Hunt in hopes of maybe catching that finish. But you make a good point, John. Even against Brock Lesnar, who might have had a little substance-related enhancement here, he was raining lunchbox hands down on Mark Hunt and still couldn't finish him. So if that's not going to do it, I'm not entirely sure what will. So I do see where you're coming from here. But, I mean, I don't know, at 42, Mark Hunt, I feel like the chin will crack eventually. We just haven't seen anything to suggest that yet.
It might crack, but I don't think it's going to crack with one shot.
Nope.
He might get finished, but I don't think he's going to get finished with a combination in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing is that you also have to keep in mind is Overeem has exhibited a questionable chin in the past. So Hunt certainly has the better chin of the two men, but I don't really think that, or at least I think it's unlikely Hunt is going to be able to get into a position to land those combinations on Overeem. Like I said, he's giving up a lot of height. He's giving up a ton of reach. And as much as I didn't really like Overeem because I didn't think his style would translate in a 5-round fight against Stipe Miocic in a title fight, a 3-round fight is better news for Overeem.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would agree with you. And when it comes to DraftKings value plays, Overeem was one that stood out for me because the salary at 8,300 is very manageable. Even if you don't get that first round knockout bonus, if you pay over 9,000 for someone, you're hunting for that knockout bonus. But at 8,300, that's actually slightly less than the average per fighter, which is just a little more than 8,300. And, you know, Overeem's a relatively strong Vegas favorite. So even if he were to somehow get a decision and that were to go, I think that makes a pretty good value play on DraftKings. I know all four of our MMA staff members went with Overeem in this one from the article I posted a little bit earlier on Thursday. We like Overeem. I agree with you. Hunt's going to be tough to finish, but I think the salary that Overeem comes out at, he's a little bit too tough to pass up in a lineup here. But you're looking for value on DraftKings, John, whether it's the main pay-per-view card that we just discussed or somewhere on the undercards here. Are there any value plays that stand out for you?
Well, one that I looked at immediately on the undercard was the featured bout on the FS1 prelims right before the pay-per-view card, and that was the Luis Henrique and Marcin Tybura fight.
Mm-hmm.
Henrique is 7,400 compared to Tybura's 8,800. Vegas-wise, Henrique is a plus 135. to Tiberius minus 155. And I like Henrique. I think he's a good, solid fighter. He's shown throughout his brief UFC career that he has different ways to win fights. Mostly a ground guy. His first fight in the UFC was knocked out by Francis Ngannou. A lot of people have been knocked out by Francis Ngannou. A lot of people are going to get knocked out by Francis Ngannou. So there's no shame in that. That might be the scariest guy in the UFC roster. So there's no shame in that. But since then, back-to-back submission wins. Admittedly, competition hasn't been great. But a guy who has spent some time in American Top Team, has spent a lot of his career at light heavyweight, not all that tall for the division, 6'2", athletic, 23 years old, a lot of room for growth. We say a lot, guys that young, it's reasonable to expect significant improvement on a fight-by-fight basis. And like we said before, this is a lot of this DraftKings is, you know, it's a puzzle. You got to figure out what fits best and what works with each. And there aren't a ton of underdogs that I like as far as on the undercard. So I think Henrique's a pretty good value play here.
Yeah, I agree with you. So that's one thing to take a look at. I also like if you go all the way down to the fight pass prelims and you need a couple fighters to fill out your lineup. Just say, for example, you're pretty confident about four, but you need a few more. There's a heavyweight and a light heavyweight fight, one between Mark Godbeer and Daniel Spitz, the light heavyweight between Tyson Pedro and Paul Craig. Both of those guys have minus 350 odds to finish or greater, some much greater. So both of those guys could potentially give you a little bit of bang for your buck here if you're looking for maybe an upset in that situation. So I think they're worth taking a look at if you're not really sure about guys and need someone to fill a lineup out. Because, again, DraftKings, the biggest thing, the winners are going to get at least three, four, maybe five knockouts, those that are finishing in the top of the money. So it might be worth taking a look at some of those.
It will. And I think this is, while the pay-per-view, the main card of the pay-per-view is strong, it's a bit of a weak undercard all the way around. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I think we should mention before we finish up here is that the return of Mirsad Bektik, who return's not, you know, the best word. He fought in, I think it was October. Mm-hmm. So it hasn't been that long. But this is a guy who legitimately, the word top prospect gets thrown around all the time. This is a guy who's legitimately one of the top prospects in MMA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and Vegas has him as minus 620, so he's also a very, very big favorite.
Yeah, Vegas has, and to give you an idea of how tough Darren Elkins is, Bektik is 9,600 on DraftKings and a minus 620 favorite, and the odds to finish are only minus 110, which should give you an idea how much damage Darren Elkins can take, which is good since his nickname is The Damage. But Mirsad Bektik is one of the top undefeated 11-0 in his career, one of the top prospects in the entire sport in any division. So if you're looking for something on the undercard to keep an eye on, I think that's the fight.
Yeah, worth a look. Could you see yourself paying 9,600 on DraftKings, or are you just not that confident in a finish?
I probably would. I never really like spending that much money on one guy, because if you spend it and they don't get a quick finish, or it's not a fight that has a lot of back and forth, the rest of your lineup is pretty much done. Mm-hmm. I agree with the odds. The odds are substantial, but I think he deserves to be that big of a favorite. But I do have confidence in Elkin's ability to take a beating. So I'm not sure it's the best use of your money at that high salary. Mm-hmm.
So that's the one you'd say you're pretty much most excited for out of the undercards. Anything else really jump at you on the card? Or are you with me and just most pumped to see the Khabib Ferguson fight?
The main event and the co-main event to me are the highlights. I think the Vanata Timur fight, while it's not going to have a huge impact or really any impact on the title picture at 155 pounds right now, I think that might be the under the radar fight as far as
fight of the night candidate, maybe.
Yeah, a lot of action. Mm-hmm. I don't think either of them are going to stand there and let the other one. You know, yeah. I don't think it's going to be a 15-minute snooze fest. So I think that's one. And Overeem and Hunt should again be another fight where a lot of fireworks. The only fight on the main card where I really see it kind of being dull and boring a little bit is the Evans and Kelly fight. And I think that's only because you're going to see a lot of wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's up there for the name. He's someone that a lot of people will recognize on name alone. The rest of those guys are probably up there for the action.
Yeah. But again, the main event and the co-main event on Saturday are as good as we're going to get this year, and really you're ever going to get. So while the last pay-per-view was a little bit disappointing, this one should more than make up for it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, to our listeners, thanks again for checking out the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts podcast today. Once again, if you want to follow John on Twitter, you can follow him at JonLitterine. You can follow me at JakeSki52. Once again, we'll be back with you guys prior to UFC 210 when Daniel Cormier takes on Rumble Johnson. John, thanks for joining me. Enjoy the fights this weekend.
Always a pleasure to talk to you soon.
Indeed.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.